afternoon. Welcome to Juno Afternoon here for Thursday, the Cinco de Mayo, 2016. I'm Jeff Brown here with you today. We'll be talking to KJ Metcalf about next week's Adams and Cruz. Paul DeSluber and Susan Cable will be here to talk about the Mud Run. We'll learn about this first Friday at High Tide. Barbara Mitchell, this month's featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery, will talk about her art. And Nancy DeCherny will be here with Arts App. Matt Renner's Almanac, Myrna, Music and More today on a Juno Afternoon. Weather forecast for today, more rain. High temperatures around 49 degrees. Forecast for tonight, rain heavy at times, low temperatures around 45 degrees. Forecast for Friday, rain high heavy at times, high temperatures around 51 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The National Trust for Historic Preservation is drawing attention to a Dakota sacred site that also served as a concentration camp for the Dakota people in Minnesota. The group has relabeled the site, as reporter Melissa Townsend tells us.
Bedote is the area where the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers come together. It's traditionally known as the place Dakota people first came into existence. During the colonization of Minnesota, Fort Snelling was erected near there and served as a concentration camp for Dakota people around the time of the 1862 war. Now, the National Trust for Historic Preservation is recognizing those two histories by calling the place Bedote Fort Snelling and declaring it a national treasure. The move is highlighted in the agency's video, now posted on YouTube.
With this designation, it means that we believe Fort Snelling is of critical national significance, and that we'll be working arm in arm with all of you to create an even more vibrant future for it.
In Minnesota, there are mixed feelings within the Dakota community over the new label. Darlene St. Clair is Dakota from the Lower Sioux community, and she's an associate professor at St. Cloud State University. She says it's good to broaden our understanding of that place to include the indigenous name and story, but her main concern is about respect and access.
I'm really interested in how Dakota people can continue to interact with these important places when a huge metropolis is built on top of them.
St. Clair says this traditional sacred space continues to be important to contemporary Dakota people, and she wants efforts to focus on its protection and preservation. For National Native News, I'm Melissa Townsend.
Sardis Lake in southeastern Oklahoma is at the heart of a battle between state and tribal governments over the control of water. Debate has raged over whether to sell the water to North Texas or to pipe it to Oklahoma City. Talks have taken place since it was built in the early 1980s. Stuck in the middle are the people who call the area home. Reporter Allison Herrera with the Invisible Nations Project has more.
Several miles down the rugged, potholed Savage Road, just past the western edge of Lake Sardis, is a neighborhood in the middle of nowhere. When water inundated the area to create Sardis Lake in southeast Oklahoma 35 years ago, it left the Kiamichi River wider than it used to be, cutting the homes off from the main road. But Ruby Burns loves it here.
I've lived in California, Oregon, New Mexico, but when I get that mailbox over there, I started crying because I was home.
These are the people who have truly sacrificed for Sardis Lake to be here, and they aren't the only ones. About 20 miles northeast in the town of Tallahena, Choctaw elders and other community members gather for lunch and a chance to socialize. Like many of the people in this little town, Pat Starbuck's ancestors came here on the Trail of Tears.
My dad was a big Choctaw Indian, and so I went through these mountains with him when I was a little kid, and he had friends that lived back at Sardis, and it was the middle of nowhere at that time. And it was a place that was settled by the Indians. They had a community back in there.
Whether their land was taken under eminent domain or they have loved ones buried in a submerged cemetery, the people around Sardis gave up a lot for the lake. For now, both the Choctaw and Chickasaw nations are in litigation with the state for control of the water. An ending to that litigation is far from over. But it's fair to say that the tribes aren't backing down. For National Native News, I'm Allison Herrera.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the year-long celebration of Native American artist Lloyd Kivamu at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and the New Mexico Museum of Art. Info at nmculture.org/LKN.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juneau afternoon for today, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. I'd like to welcome my first guest to the studio, Dan Monteith and K.J. Metcalf from the Friends of Admiralty, talking about a cruise coming up on May 14th. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. It's really a pleasure to be here. And I want to talk about this cruise that we have coming up on Saturday, May 14th. And it's kind of become an annual thing that we've taken a cruise somewhere on Admiralty Island. And they become really popular, but there's only 100 tickets, so they're going fast, and we urge people to, if they want to come on the cruise, to be sure they get a ticket. You can get a ticket at the Jack Building or the bookstores, and the tickets are $90, and that's quite a bargain for a full-day cruise, and lots of experts on board to talk about the, you know, Hawk Inlet has an amazing history of actually ancient history, and Dan can maybe talk a little bit about that. But also the cannery history has been important to a lot of people in Angoon and Juneau who grew up there. And then more recently, the Greens Creek Mine has hired people and has been there since, I think they started operation in 1989. And Friends of Admiralty has done a study in the inlet looking at pollution and some issues. So we're going to have a chance to talk about all of these wonderful aspects of Hawk Inlet aboard the vessel. And we're picking up two of the officials from the mine who are going to talk about some of the challenges they face and some of the opportunities that the mine presents to the region. So it's a wonderful day of wildlife history and science. And Linda Buckley, who is most people know her as an incredible community gift, and she's going to be our musician and poet to take us home. So Dan, how about the early history?
Yeah, we're going to have some naturalists and other folks along, and I'm going to speak to some of the human history and natural history of Admiralty Island as we work our way down the island to Hawk Inlet. And right across from Hawk Inlet, as many folks know, is Young's Bay. And right there you have just a thin little landmass that connects the northern and southern part of Admiralty Island. And approximately maybe about 6,000 years ago, or maybe a little bit older than that, that area was a waterway, you know, with isostatic rebound, with the glaciers receding and the land uplifting. Now we have that landmass there. So that area is known in Tlingit oral histories as being a place where it was a canoe portage, but even before that, there's stories that kind of tie together how they may have made their way just as a water passage. So it's an exciting area in terms of the natural history and a beautiful area. Of course, we have the Hawk Inlet Cannery, and last time we went on this trip, we had a few folks who had worked in the cannery, and we had a lot of historic photos, and were able to kind of just talk and reminisce about the history of the canning days in general in Southeast Alaska, but also the Hawk Inlet Cannery.
When did the cannery get established?
What's that?
When did the cannery get established?
You know, boy, if you hadn't asked me, I could have told you. I'm trying to remember. It operated right up until, what would you say, KJ, up until the 50s or 60s?
Yeah, I think a little later than that. It was going on and then it burned.
Yeah, right.
In I think that was in the maybe the 70s or early 80s, but it is really an important piece of history and part of the culture of the area.
Yeah, a lot of folks from both Juneau and Angoon and even Hoonah would go there to work during the summertime, and of course that area right outside of there is a major fishery and has been throughout the 20th century and now into the 21st.
Right, there was a major fish trap that was right outside, and it's such an important, rich place. The salmon come in there and they kind of auger in front of the outlet, and they spend some time there, and it's also a very important rearing area for salmon and for the juvenile salmon. So the water quality is an issue, and that's something that we've always been concerned about with the mine there, and maybe also with the some effects of the cannery itself. But so we're looking forward to an incredible day of conversation and history and music.
And it starts at 8 o'clock in the morning and goes till 4 in the afternoon. That's on May 14th, which is a Saturday.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I just urge folks to take advantage of this. Not sure how many more years we'll be able to do this, so you better take advantage while you can. This would be a great outing for the family and lots of folks to meet and talk to, and a lot of really knowledgeable people. Juneau is just gifted with the knowledgeable people that we have, and they're so willing to share that knowledge. So take advantage of it.
Okay, Jim Metcalf and Dan Monteith, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 5th of May, 2016. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, commemorating the Mexican victory over the French in the Battle of Puebla, 1862. 8,000 well-armed French troops were routed by 4,000 ill-equipped Mexican soldiers. Not a crucial battle, but a symbol of Mexican pride, a celebration of Mexican culture in this country, and adopted by many Americans regardless of their heritage, as St. Patrick's Day has been, or Oktoberfest, and heavily promoted by beer companies. It's the birthday of Søren Kierkegaard, born in Copenhagen, 1813, son of a wealthy wool merchant who left his son enough money to be financially independent for the rest of his life. Kierkegaard, who rarely left Copenhagen, but enjoyed walking around the city, chatting with people he met, including people of the servant or working class, who wealthy people ordinarily would ignore. And he wrote philosophy. It was Kierkegaard who gave us the idea of subjectivity, the idea that we all perceive the world differently, and the leap of faith, the idea that faith is not possible without doubt, that one must doubt the existence of God to have faith in the existence of God. He published books at his own expense, including Either Or, Works of Love, and The Sickness Unto Death. It's the birthday of the crusading journalist Nellie Bly, born Elizabeth Jane Cochran in Armstrong County, Pennsylvania, 1864. Nellie Bly was her pen name. She wrote exposés of working conditions in factories and sweatshops, sometimes working there undercover. She wrote in Pittsburgh and then at Joseph Pulitzer's New York World, where she posed as a mentally ill person. She convinced doctors that she was mentally ill, and so was committed to the notorious Blackwell's Island Women's Lunatic Asylum, and lived there for 10 days and wrote all about it. It's the birthday of the man who said, "No man is lonely while eating spaghetti," Christopher Morley, born Haverford, Pennsylvania, 1890. Prolific author, wrote 100 books, including novels like Parnassus on Wheels and Kitty Foyle, a sentimental bestseller in 1939 about an Irish-American office girl. Christopher Morley said, "You can blow up a man with gunpowder in half a second, while it may take 20 years to blow him up with a book, but the gunpowder destroys itself along with its victim, while a book can keep on exploding for centuries." Here's a poem for today by Paul Martin, Strawberries. It's ripe strawberries that bring me to my knees in the garden this morning, impossibly big and red as those on the covers of gardening magazines in January, and almost as sweet as the small wild ones my brother and I picked up on Best's Hill, eating more than we dropped into the coffee cans our mother fitted with wire handles. If a cloud moved across that blue sky, casting a shadow, I didn't notice. The snakes we were warned about never appeared, and who could see, even in that brilliant light, beyond the quiet hills all the way to Vietnam and the war he'd carry back with him? Heads down, we browsed through the field until we were filled and drowsy, sprawled next to each other in the warm grass, juice smeared across our t-shirts, our mouths, and hands. A poem, Strawberries, by Paul Martin from his collection Closing Distances, published by the Backwaters Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This station receives support from Canyon Hydro with custom hydro system designs, complete water-to-wire packages, and repair and replacement services for public and private hydro systems, serving small communities since 1976. More information is available at canyonhydro.com.
It's about 18 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Junior Afternoon. Our next guests, Paula Sluber and Susan Cable from Southeast Roadrunners, here to talk about the Mud Run. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Jeff, for having
us.
So tell me first about the Southeast Roadrunners, if you can, please.
Well, Southeast Roadrunners has been in existence, I think, about 28 years or so. They took over for Juneau Parks and Rec, who was at the time conducting fun runs. And Juneau Parks and Rec said, this is a lot of work. We'll give you all our equipment if you'll create a club and start doing this for us. So that's when it came about. And so we've been in existence since then, and the number of races has increased over the years. Till now, we run races January through December, and probably a total of about 30 to 32 races per year.
I thought running was supposed to be a solitary kind of emotional experience, and instead you guys are racing.
Well, you wear your headsets, and it's still solitary.
When is this happening?
It's on Sunday. May 8th, this coming Sunday, that's Mother's Day, at 9 a.m. And we moved it from Saturday because Saturday has a whole bunch of other running and track-related events going on. So a lot of people have said, oh, great, it's Sunday, I can come. So that makes me very happy. Plus, the weather forecast is best for Sunday morning. It's a beautiful location out there at the end of Fish Creek on North Douglas Road. And we've got the extra-sized outhouse, and we've got home-baked cookies and other treats, and Heritage is donating coffee, and so it's a great day to come out, 9 a.m. Sunday.
What's the round?
Pardon?
What's the round?
Oh, okay. So there are two courses. The long course, and we've got some of the foremost mountain runners in town have told me they intend to run the long course, so I expect it to be kind of competitive. But that one leaves from the end of Fish Creek and goes up Fish Creek Trail to, well, it's called Fish Creek Road, but most people know it as the road to Eagle Crest, there where the road crosses the Fish Creek itself, down that road to 9 Mile Road, across to a flag on the Dyke Trail, and then back to the start of Fish Creek. That's about 7 miles, depending on what course you choose going across the channel. That makes a big difference. Some people, if you choose poorly, you could end up backing up and taking a longer time. The shorter course leaves from the same spot there at the Fish Creek parking lot, 8 Mile North Douglas Highway, and goes straight across the wetlands and channel to the same flag on the Dyke Trail, and then back again. And that course is about 4 miles, and it's appropriate for walkers. The tide is the lowest tide of the year. Both Saturday and Sunday are both the same low, but it starts right at 9 o'clock. Minus 4.67 is the predicted low tide. So there shouldn't be any real swimming involved. I'm not going to promise people can stay dry, but appropriate for walkers, and should be wonderful. Should be a wonderful experience.
Do you wear Southie sneakers?
I do not. I just get wet.
What kind of conditions are there? Is it mud, pretty much?
Oh, it's mud, pretty much. And the beauty of the thing is that once you're on the tide flats, there is no course. You set your own course to that flag. So people go different directions and different routes depending on how they feel or what they think is going to be the quickest route. But because it's low tide, you're in the mud, and your shoes, partway through, you feel like you're running in cement shoes, not running shoes. And it's difficult because you're sinking in constantly into the mud. And then when you do hit the water, you're fighting the current, trying to come back. And even though it may only be knee-high, sometimes it's up to your hips, depending on where you cross. It's a challenge. Yeah, it's quite a challenge. And then you get to the slippery, moss-covered rocks around Bayview. And if you stay up, you're lucky. Yeah.
And they call it a fun run.
They call it a fun run, yeah.
It's iconic how often you get the chance to cross the channel on foot. That's nice.
What to wear?
What to wear, Paul?
Well, people show up in tutus. I mean, there's a variety, but you can wear whatever you like, but just prepared to get, wet and muddy. So that's the main thing. Don't wear your best suit.
What's the cost?
Cost is $5 if you sign up before 5 p.m. on Saturday. And it's $10 on same-day registration, which starts at 8:30. If you'd like to sign up in advance, you can get the form online on Facebook. It's a publicly accessible site. Springtide Scramble has a link where you can go to the registration form, and then you can drop that off or pick up a form as well to fill out at either of the Alaska Club locations, JRC Alaska Club, Foggy Mountain, Pavitz, or Nugget Alaskan Outfitters. By 5 p.m. Saturday, $5. Sunday, $10. It's 50% off.
Paul DeSlipper, Susan Cable, thank you for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, there are age restrictions. So if you're going to run a short course, it's you have to be anyone 14 or under has to be accompanied by a parent or guardian. And how about the long course?
The long course, you need to be 18 years old to run it.
Okay.
At all.
All right. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Mr. Richard Dowling is one of the featured performers this year at the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. If you need more information on that, check out their website at www.jazzandclassics.org. In the studio now, I'm joined by two musicians and a tattoo artist, Darren Donahue, Devin Kessler, and Dave Lang, here to talk about First Friday events. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So this is a mixture of art and music.
Yeah, we're High Tide has been doing a featured artist series this year. This is our third show. We always like to mix the artwork with music. We always like to pair a live performer with the artwork and the shows that we do. And this time we get the pleasure of having a double duty. Devin's doing not only the artwork, but we'll be doing the music as well. So he's going to have paintings and merchandise available and then also be playing music for us.
Devin, can you describe your art and your music?
Well, definitely a lot of skulls and spooky stuff. And I definitely like to draw and create things as a way to get out whatever I need to get out. So sometimes I can draw super happy fun stuff, and oftentimes I like to get the demons out by drawing skulls and reapers and singing cranky songs and all that good stuff.
Very much based in traditional tattoo imagery, you know, when you think of the skull and dagger type stuff. It's very much along those lines. It's within that realm for sure.
What kind of materials do you use?
What was that?
What kind of materials do you use?
Oh, as far as the artwork end things go, like for creating the physical paintings and stuff, I like to use just kind of run-of-the-mill stuff, nothing fancy, just liquid watercolor paints, and just preferably better than Walmart watercolor paper. I'll use whatever paper's around as long as it's not horribly dirt paper. But nothing fancy.
What kind of artists inspire you?
Oh, gosh, there are a lot. Most of them would probably have to be tattooers. Thanks to Dave kind of taking me down that whole route. It's hard to base any of my inspirations off of, like, high art or fine artists or anything like that. I draw a lot of inspiration from tattooers that I admire that just kind of push the boundaries of making things, like, traditional but also real fresh and new and that kind of thing. So there's a ton of artists out there that I follow online and on Instagram and all that good stuff that just every day I'm inspired by looking at their design.
What is the instrument do you play?
I play guitar primarily. For the show, we're doing an interesting little setup where I'm actually going to be playing guitar and bass at the same time by splitting my guitar rig into two amps, a guitar amp and a bass amp, and having an octave pedal in front of the bass amp to basically trick it into thinking my guitar is a bass. So for the show, it's just going to be Darren and I. Darren's going to be on drums, and I'm going to be handling all the guitar and bass and vox, and it's going to be loud and fun.
And you're releasing a CD.
Yes. Yeah, there's an EP coming out at First Friday. It's called Anger Machine. And, yeah, I'm super excited about it. It's something that I've been kind of working on in the back of my mind for a little while. And then when Dave presented the idea of doing this art show for me, it kind of all fell into place to, like, well, shoot, I've been sitting on some stuff that I've been working on, and I think it'd be really cool to kind of crank it out and get it presentable for this show to kind of show the two sides of what I do. Like, I tattoo for a living, and it's my life, and I love it more than anything, but when I'm not doing that, I'm playing music and working on that and have been for a long time. So I'm very excited about this, to kind of show the two aspects of the physical visual art and the audible kind of music stuff that I do in my free time as well.
And Darren, you're not going to try to fool the drum kids and think it's a saxophone.
We're having a little fun with it for sure. You know, it's been a good time, you know, do a little tricks here and there, you know, a little bit of drummer secrets or whatever. But no, it's going to stay a drum set very much. It won't be a saxophone. No barrier or anything. It'll be good. It'll be a fun time.
Tell them about the oboe.
Yeah, it's a secret, but yeah, it's secret. One of the bass drums is actually a tuba, so.
How would you describe your music?
Well, my stuff that I like to work with kind of is in a similar realm. Like, we're kind of in a headspace where we're like, oh, man, we got all this vent-up, like, emotion and stuff that's going on that you like to just kind of put out there. But a little bit of everything, you know. Playing with Devin's actually been a lot of fun. We're getting this EP together, and we're looking forward to this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything from, like, you know, kind of more of, like, a psychedelic realm for myself to, like, more of an alternative, like, you know, Peter Bourne and John, whatever. But no, here, having a good time working on getting this music out, and it'll be a fun time.
Yeah, we kind of, I kind of plucked Darren right out of his comfort zone there, and I made a call out on Facebook a little while back after the EP was pretty much written. I just needed to record it, but I needed someone to play it live. I don't know a lot of drummers in town here that would be interested in the genre, I suppose, of music that I was trying to create. And I had a couple of people recommended me on Facebook, and a friend of mine tagged Darren in the post, and we wound up talking through Facebook messages and stuff and getting stuff going. But I'm absolutely stoked. Since we've been practicing, he keeps saying, like, oh, this one's a little bit out of my, I don't know, it's a little bit on the far reaches of what I play, but he's just been killing it every time, you know, like, he's a lot of the Tame Impala, kind of more almost surfy, kind of spacey stuff, not to label your kind of brand of music, but kind of taking him out of that world and bringing him into the heavy, kind of slow stoner metal kind of genre. It's been a blast. It's really cool. He's killing it.
No, it's been fun. It's been fun stretching.
So there are two locations for it. One is the Taqueria, just across the street from Marine Park, and the other is the Rendezvous, which is just up the street from Franklin.
Yeah, the first Friday, the art show portion of it is at the Taqueria starting at 7. I believe it goes till 10, correct?
Yeah, we usually have to cut off kind of early there just because they have residential apartments above it, so we're never able to go too late. And we knew that we definitely wanted to extend the music end of things with this because it's sort of a special occasion. So then we're taking it to the Rendezvous and doing the full show there. So.
Yeah.
Is there a cost to get in the Rendezvous?
Nope.
Nah.
Nope.
Nah, just show up and headbang.
All right, Darren Donahue, Darren Kessler, and Dave Lang, anything you want to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
Just want to thank Juno for the continued support. Every time we put on one of these events, we've been really, really fortunate to have a lot of support locally and a lot of people come out, and we always have a great time. And part of the goal with the shop is definitely beyond tattoos to be able to do this kind of stuff in the community and just feel really fortunate to be able to do that here and get a lot of good support. And thanks for that.
How long does an average tattoo take?
Oh, there's no such thing as an average tattoo.
I stand corrected.
Anywhere between 10 minutes to like 5.5, 6 hours. 10
minutes to 2 hours, yeah. You can really go across the board.
And you're located at 2nd and Franklin?
Yeah, 2nd and Franklin, 200 North Franklin Street.
All right, thanks so much for coming.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much for having us.
Lydia, oh Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia the tattooed lady. She has eyes that folks adore so, and a torso even more so. Lydia, oh Lydia, that encyclopedia. Oh Lydia, the queen of tattoo. On her back is the Battle of Waterloo. Beside it, the wreck of the Hesperus too. And proudly above waves the red, white, and blue. You can learn a lot from Lydia. When a robe is unfurled, she will show you the world if you step up and tell her where. For a dime, you can see Kankakee or Paris or Washington crossing the Delaware. So start relaxing. Off the hill comes Andrew Jackson. Lydia, oh Lydia, that encyclopedia. Oh Lydia, the queen of them all. For 2 bits she will do a mazurka in jazz with a view of Niagara that nobody has. And on a clear day you can see Alcatraz. You can learn a lot from Lydia. And see Buffalo Bill with his lasso. Just a little classic by Mendel Picasso. Here is Captain Spaulding exploring the Amazon. Here's Godiva, but with her pajamas on. Here is Grover Whalen unveiling the Trilon. Over on the West Coast, we have Treasure Island. Here's Nijinsky doing the rumba. Here's her social security number. Oh, Lydia, oh, Lydia. once swept an admiral clear off his feet. The ship's on her hips made his heart skip a beat. And now the old boy's in command of the fleet. For he went and married Lydia. I said Lydia.
He said Lydia.
They said Lydia.
We said Lydia.
Nah, nah.
The Marx Brothers. It's 36 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in Juno afternoon. You're on a rainy day today. Our next guest in the studio is Barbara Mitchell. She's here to talk about the becoming an artist in Juno, as well as the new artist in the Juno Artist Gallery. Barbara, thank you very much for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's been a long time since you came and tried your balloons out in my classroom.
I'm still full on air.
I know. I loved you trying out the book.
So you want to tell me about your art, Lee?
Well, I grew up doing a lot of crafts, but I give 95% of the credit for my becoming an artist to the Juno School District. I started as a gifted and talented teacher at Gastineau in 1989, and part of the responsibilities that you had back then was you taught the art class as well as the academics and the problem solving. And I was really at my wit's end, but the Juno School District had a great idea when they had their special ed teachers meet with the classroom teachers to do the planning. They brought in artists to teach the classes, and Diane Anderson, who's now the founding member, one of the founding members of the gallery, was teaching those classes. So I asked her if I could come in, and I would help with the classroom management and the cleanup if she would do the actual teaching. I'd bring my art students in with me. And I did that for 2 years, and I had the opportunity to create my own portfolio. I learned an awful lot about art and how to do it at a really basic level, which was just right for me. And so a year or so after I retired, having had a lot of in-service classes also from Christine Crooks and Annie Calkins, both people who are well-known in the arts community here, decided to go into the gallery, and Diane said I should try out. And Carol Burrows, another retired teacher who's an incredible fiber artist, and I came in as business partners, and we started out just doing purses. We called ourselves the Bag Ladies. And then gradually I got more and more interested in the problem-solving part of it. So now I needle felt in the wintertime, and in the summer, when it's rainy or not, I'm using a soldering iron as a heat tool to melt and fuse together synthetic fabrics. And I'm really fortunate to have permission from almost every photographer here in the city to use their photographs one time, and I always give them credit for that inspiration. So it's been an incredible 7 years, but after 35 years living here, I'm about to move south. I'm an official member of the Sandwich Generation, so with ancient fathers on the East Coast and a brand-new granddaughter, I have to bid farewell to my beloved Juno.
You're moving to Washington State, and I hear it rains there, too.
Yes, I understand that, although their idea of a rainy day and ours are there's quite a difference in perspective, but I'm hoping to still be able to continue having my artwork be about Alaska through maybe Public Market and Taku Graphics and some of the people that still want to hear and see my work. So that's the intent anyway.
I'm interested in that soldering iron.
I now get catalogs from industrial equipment. It started out as just a book from Joann's, and it turns out after talking to the author of the book, the book was called Fused Fabrics, I wrote to her and sent her some of my photos, and she said, I'm the only one that she knows of that's actually doing representational art. It's not graphic design or collages in the traditional sense. It's using tiny pieces of fabric almost as if it was a mosaic. So, and all my pieces almost are all gone now. I have one left of a raven sitting on Marine Way and South Franklin Street on the light post there. So I'm hoping that will find a home before I leave.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but you're the featured artist for this month.
Yes.
Are you going to have any work at all on the show?
Probably just, I'm hoping to see a lot of my former students and their families. So what it ends up being about is just explaining your art. Having a hot soldering iron in the gallery with that many people is a little dangerous. So, but I will be there showing some of the things that I've done and thanking the folks who've come to say goodbye.
Now, you credited people in Juneau for helping you with your art. How can you leave a supportive atmosphere like that?
Not easily. I was always the one that was ready to leave. I only came here for a year in 1981, and now it's 35 years later, and it's very, very bittersweet. I will miss tremendously all of the people here who contributed so much to both my career as a teacher and as an artist. I'm really excited right now knowing that Amy Jo Miners is in Washington, D.C. as the Alaska State Teacher of the Year and is getting recognition at the White House. And I was lucky enough to get to work with her through the Extended Learning Program back before I retired. So this school district is filled with so many incredibly talented people. And the school district provided so much training and that personal inspiration and the challenge that I thought I was giving mainly to my students, but it's turned out that it's come back around and turned in on myself. And so I look at some of my students now, former students who are artists, and I really identify a lot more with how they think and how they approach their art and how it feeds their soul when maybe the academics part of it wasn't their strongest suit. It's really exciting.
So at the Juneau Artist Gallery, you've got a big easel to fill.
Yes. There are three new artists coming, and I think I've used up my entire capacity for memory of new names, and I will I'll be embarrassed if I say them incorrectly, but I'm hoping that folks will come down and learn more about who those artists are. And the Juneau Artist Gallery is always well known for their excellent snacks. We give out good treats for First Friday. So, and I've actually baked cookies, which is pretty incredible considering that the cookie sheets are already packed.
Barbara Mitchell, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, just a big, big thank you to all of the people who have enriched my life over the last 35 years and who supported my transition from being an educator to an artist. And I hope to keep in touch with them through online media. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Barbara.
walking with my grandma. Mississippi sun beaming down. I went to get some water. My grandma said, "Young'un, you can't drink that water." She said, "You drink from that fountain over there." And that fountain had a sign. Said, "For colored only." I was so glad I had my grandma.
That's the music of Mavis Staples. She'll be headlining, I think, May 20th. It's part of the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. If you need more information on that, check out their website at www.jazzandclassics.org. In the studio with me now is Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
And it is Jazz and Classics Week kicking right off here. Let's see. There's a few things Thursday night that are not related to that. There's Bluegrass Thursdays at the Red Dog Saloon at 6:30, Tango Dancing at Suite 907 at 7, some open mics, karaoke. You can, and there's a book signing at Hearthside Books at 5 o'clock. You can get more information about that both at the KTOO.org website and the JAHC.org website, where you can get the complete calendar. Friday is First Friday, all kinds of things going on. Stop at the Jack first and get your little First Friday map, but at 2:30, from 2:30 to 6 over at Gastineau, they're having a Gastineau gallery walk for kids stuff. So if you happen to be over in Douglas, go there. 4:30, the First Friday receptions generally start. We have right here, what is the name of your store? There's a really wonderful
Broadsides.
Yeah, you know, I really foolishly forgot to bring the little flyer with all that stuff with me. I can tell you there are quite a few things going on all over. Kopov, Annie Kales, Caribou Crossings. There's just a whole posse of things. And if you stop at the Arts Council, we'll give you a little map and you'll, oh, look, Jeff has it already printed out. Isn't that wonderful? So we've got the Poetry Broadside, which is artists and poets exhibiting together at KTOO. You guys are open till 6:30. COPA has Molly Briggs and Mercy Brown doing photography of water on the life on the water. And they are having a nonverbal documentary feature film called Everything Connects. Just synopsis of their exhibit is a synopsis of that. The Salt Cave and Spa will have a First Friday special, so you can stop in there on your way. The City Museum has new works by David Woody. And then we have, as you wander down the hill, Sketch Studio, M.K. McNaughton has herself and Brandon Hauser. It's like a scavenger hunt to find M.K.'s studio if you've not been there before. You come down Main Street and you look for the little chalkboard where you can write what you'd like to do. Look across the parking lot there behind Kenny's Teriyaki, and you see M.K.'s Sketch Studio. Go there. The Heritage Coffee at Baranoff Hotel has Terry Jo Hedman. That show will hang until May. Annie Kales has Louise Kunz Tata's Ceramics and Pottery, her stuff is always fabulous. There is a book signing on Friday at Hearthside Books. John and Jan Straley will be there with their book about Ed Ricketts.
He's a contemporary of John Steinbeck.
Okay, so it's inquisitive, inventive, and having a deep respect for the ocean and all its creatures. So Hearthside's got a bunch. They also have some book signings happening out in the valley, a Newbery Award winner. There's a lot of really interesting book things happening this weekend. Walter Soboloff Center has Rhonda Butler, Renee Culp, Selena Beerley open, and this is your opportunity to get in and see the Clan House at no charge. Usually there's a little admission fee. So stop in there. You have at the Rookery also M.K. McNaughton's oil paintings. At the Canvas, Grace Conrad. She does all sorts of stuff. Ink, graphite, paint, ceramic. She was in wearable art. And it's amazing. Aunt Claudia's is having a really fun show. She is making little dolls of local notables carved in wood and clad in miniature reproductions of their favorite duds. So what we should do is have a little contest to figure out who are the local notables. with favorite duds that should be there, and then we'll all go there. And Claudia's Dolls is a little museum. It's above Hearthside Books. You get to it off of Franklin Street. Kindred Post, signed, sealed, and delivered. It's your opportunity to write some letters. Maybe you need to send a Mother's Day card. So go there. Elsie Copens, the 11-year-old founder and CEO of Mountain Goat Notes, will be there to help with custom letter writing to delight any recipient. And there will be live music by baritone ukulele by Julie Copens, also known as Elsie's mom. So bring your address book.
Elsie will be here in the studio tomorrow.
So excellent. There's a little rainforest yoga tidbit happening from 5:15 to 6:15, led by Carol Race. And then there is the Juno Artist Gallery, Farewell to Barb Mitchell, as you was just discussing. Caribou Crossing has Lisa McCormick and jewelry by her. Beautiful stuff. It's the season reopening. You know, everything's happening now because it is the season. So once you get done with all of that First Friday stuff, there's a ballroom dance back at the Jack. So come on back for that. I think they're doing cross-step waltz with Bruce Patello, lessons by Bruce Patello. And Annapurna opens. They once again caution you not to delay going to see these things. The Jazz and Classics Blues Dance Party with the Carolyn Wonderland Band. She's from Austin. She's amazing. If you haven't heard it, go on to the YouTubes and listen to her. You're going to want to go over to the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall and do some dancing.
You know that Bob Dylan and Ray Benson from Asleep at the Wheel are both big fans of Carolyn's.
So there. Those people know what they're talking about. You and I, on the other hand.
Yeah.
We may or may not. On Saturday morning at 8, from 8 till 11, the Juno Rotaract kids are doing a breakfast for Shelterbox. These are actually the Rotary Exchange students. The breakfast is at St. Anne's Parish Hall, and the funds will help them buy shelter boxes for the earthquake victims in Ecuador. They will be having breakfast items from the different countries that the Rotary Exchange students are from. So it should be a really nice opportunity for you to help out and learn about breakfasts in different countries and all sorts of things. 8:30 in the morning, the Juno Audubon Society Burners Bay Cruise. Get your tickets at Hearthside Books. It is the big pansy sale, plant sale, everything, kind of get your gardening stuff ready. There's the Auk Bay Pansy Sale that starts at 8:30 in the morning. There is the Super Plant Sale at the Safeway parking lot at 9 a.m., and you do have to come ready because it's a madhouse there. There is also the Springtide Scramble from Fish Creek Parking Lot in North Douglas, the Blessing of the Fleet and the Reading of the Names at 10 a.m. on the memorial wall next to Twisted Fish. Maritime Festival. Isn't there too much to do? Gosh, there's a lot to do. I think there was also a Maritime Festival Port to Starboard Dinner on Friday night at 6 p.m. that I neglected to mention, and a Cinco de Mayo party happening at the Hangar Ballroom at 6:30. So Friday's just really packed, and then you got to get up and have breakfast, and then you got to run and get your plants and all that sort of stuff. Go to the Maritime Festival. There's a Pilates open house. The Pilates Bodies is celebrating their third anniversary. That is from noon to 4 on Saturday. The Blues Cruise, the 5 p.m. Blues Cruise, sold out, sorry. There are 14 tickets left for the 9 p.m. Blues Cruise. Blues Cruises are always a lot of fun. So 14 of you need to call right away and get your tickets for the 9 p.m. one. We've got Annapurna running, of course. There's the Springtide Scramble, also known as the Mud Run, happening on Sunday. Why is it on here twice?
It's really Sunday.
It's really Sunday.
And you should wear tuxedos. It's formal.
It's a formal one this year?
Okay. I'm just kidding.
It's good to know.
I hate that somebody show up with a tuxedo on. That is okay.
Yeah, you can wear whatever you like. Whatever's comfortable. Let's see. We've got Annapurna happening at 4. Strings at the Shrine, a very popular set of concerts at Jazz and Classics. Both of the performances are unfortunately sold out. But if it's a nice day, come out, because sometimes people can fit in And if it's a pleasant day, nothing else, you're out there in the nice weather, and I think it's supposed to get nice. On Monday, there is the Makerspace Open Shop from 6 to 8 p.m., and Mondays are a drag at the Rendezvous, 7:30. On Tuesday, there's some English classes, there's a citizenship class, there's the Juneau City Museum is starting their walking tours. They do history walking tours in the downtown area, and you can get your tickets for those online. And you end up at the Capitol Bed and Breakfast for tea and crumpets. There's the All-American Celebration with Richard Dowling at T.K. McGuire's. There's a strings workshop with the Vega Quartet. By the way, the Vega folks are over in Tenneke. If you happen to be over there, they just flew over to do a concert in Tenneke today. West Coast Swing Dancing out at the Suite 907. On Wednesday, we have Right for Your Life at the Mendenhall Valley Library. Again, the historic walking tours. They're going to go on all summer long, but it's a nice thing to take people, visitors, and also you probably learn something about your place. The Jazz and Classics Cafe Music that's going to be at T.K. McGuire's only has 17 tickets left also. So Science on the Screen, the new fun thing they're doing over with at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, they're featuring Some Like It Hot, one of my favorite movies with Marilyn Monroe in a hilarious role. It's fun, and I didn't know it was science, but there you have it. It's also Mudrooms Night, Wednesday, May 11th, over at Northern Light Church. So there's a few things to do this week. I hope you took notes. If not, jahc.org. And we'll see you tomorrow over at the Jack.
This is Bird Note. In 2015, a study by NASA found that the United States has around 63,000 square miles of lawn, enough turf to carpet more than 30 million football fields, including end zones, or nearly enough to cover the state of Wisconsin. Unless you're a starling, that's not great news, because most birds prefer shrubs that provide food and cover, and lawns have a lot of side effects. They suck up fertilizers, herbicides, fossil fuels, and extraordinary quantities of water. But they're hard to escape, in part because their roots lie deep in American society. The well-kept lawn began as an ideal to please the eye, a velvet robe surrounding the home, as one 1870s reformer put it. It soon became a badge of good character, deviation from which was seen as distinctly undesirable. Fast forward to the 1950s, and the idea of the lawn as an indicator of success was firmly established as suburbs bloomed across the country.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also